Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Lord of the Inferno, Volume 2 of War of the Fathers. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Lord of the Inferno. Last week we read, the Hunwe were still further down the street, near and narrow, were becoming more and more alone. Before long, the Hunwe would come for them if they continued to wait here. The closest structure was an older home that was about 40 feet away. If Nir had known he would need to move Thon today, he would have brought more men. By Barry's head, if he would have known about any of this, he would not have come. He looked around, hoping Bark had not gone far. But the man was nowhere to be seen. With so few left, their sad little group would feel the loss. His eyes fell on Goru, and he shook his head. What a waste. Come on, Nir said, grabbing one of Thon's arms and motioning to the other with a nod of his head. We'll drag him in there and see what we can do. Thon stirred as they moved. His eyes opened, and he stared into Nir's face. When their eyes made contact, Nir found himself hoping Thon never learned the truth that it was Nir who had killed Braum. Chapter 2. A piece of gravel crunched under Adar Rahid's foot as he twisted and scanned the town square while looking for Hunwe through the smoky yellow haze that hung in the air. It was starting to dissipate in most places, but it was still dense where the Hunwe had been congregated before the tower had done its work and burned them to death. Adar spotted a mound of Hunwe where they had collapsed onto some people. He looked away without examining it too closely. It was not a pretty way to die, and had likely been quite painful. He tried to avoid thinking about how many people had died in that spot, but found he could not help but wonder if there had been children in the still burning mass. He frowned, a low growl rumbling in his throat. He supposed he should have been glad for the people who had been saved by the tower, but it did not make the thought of those who had died any more palatable. When the sun peeked out from behind the clouds, the smoky haze gave the area below it a brownish tint, causing him to squint. The burning mass was not the only such pile of Hunwe and humans. Movement from a pile of dead Hunwe caught Adar's attention. One of the dead Hunwe's legs had moved. The body lay on the ground, but the leg had twitched. Another Hunwe lay next to the first. It was easy to see by comparison that the first was considerably smaller. Humans in Hunwe armor, Adar thought. I thought I was prepared for anything, but I never considered this. He did not know what to call these humans, but he supposed they were as much Hunwe as those who were a couple of feet taller. Still, he wanted to distinguish between the two. Turncoat was as good of a word as any. It was difficult to think of the turncoat humans as Hunwe, but he would get used to it with time. The implications of these turncoats were still beginning to dawn on him. He guessed these traitors to humanity were descendants of those whom the Hunwe had taken captive. 1,000 years was enough time for the Hunwe to raise a whole society that had been turned to their side. He clenched his hands at the thought, wondering if any of his ancestors had been among those who were kidnapped. The turncoats would likely have a hard time blending in with the other people or even communicating. Their language had to have become corrupt during the intervening time, but he figured it was best to act as if they did know how to communicate until he knew otherwise. In the area surrounding the turncoat, Adar saw other dead Hunwe. He could tell by the size of their helmets they were not human. He figured the Hunwe's turncoat armor must have protected the turncoat from the flames of his fellow Hunwe as they had died. The turncoat moved again, this time lifting up his head. Cursing, Adar cast about, looking for a dead Hunwe so he could pick up a blaster, but there was not anything close that he could reach quickly. Adar's last blaster had stopped working while he'd been shooting at the departing ship the Hunwe turncoats had taken. He'd picked a blaster up off a dead Hunwe, but unfortunately the ship had already been far enough away that he doubted he'd hit it. He took a deep breath and gagged. He had not noticed the smell of the burned Hunwe bodies at first. Once he had, it had seemed like such a trifling matter compared to everything else that had been going on. He had not realized how bad it was until now. It was a struggle to keep from covering his mouth as he anxiously searched for a nearby blaster. Hunwe aren't the only things burning, he thought, as he spotted more humans that had died when the Hunwe had all caught fire. It was a lucky thing Adar had been far enough away from any of the Hunwe when the tower had burned them. The townspeople, many of whom were women and children who had been prisoners, were moving again. Those who had been outside when the tower had done its work had been knocked to the ground by the wind, but they were up on their feet again. The women and children Adar had found in the holding bays of the ships had been eager to leave when they told them that it was safe to go outside. The Hunwake turncoat was already on his feet when Adar looked back. The closest group of dead Hunwake was further away than the turncoat. Bloody Melia, Adar thought as he burst into a run, wishing he had time to look for another blaster. The one he'd fired at the ship had stopped working on the fifth shot. He thought of his Oakwee dagger, but did not take it out. He wanted both hands free, and he was not sure that it would work. If he moved quick enough, he could take the Hunwake by surprise and snatch the blaster away. Because this one was human, the man should have a harder time holding on to his blaster. If Adar had been charging an actual Hunwake, he would have tried the dagger, his doubts about it notwithstanding. But he did not hesitate to pit himself against other men. The turncoat shook his head as he looked towards the tower and scooted backward while he brought up his blaster. Adar increased his speed while stepping as light as possible. When he was less than 10 feet away, his foot snagged on an abandoned shovel, and he almost lost his balance. He had thought to step over it, but had miscalculated. Shifting his weight to keep from keeling over, he tried to slow, but it did not help. He went down, cringing at the clanging sound the shovel made as it was dragged across the cobblestone street. Grabbing the shovel by the handle, Adar lunged to his feet as the Hunwake turncoat turned to look at the noise. He was raising his blaster when Adar clocked him in the neck with the blade of the shovel, sharp side pointed in like an axe. The turncoat shifted, and it glanced off the shoulder plate of his armor. Adar plowed into the turncoat while twisting his shovel and thrusting it into the man's feet. He caught a glimpse of surprise on the human face looking out from the other side of the visor. The Hunwake were not used to those who fought back. They both fell in a heap. The turncoat's face would have been indistinguishable in a crowd. Adar had expected the man would be difficult to tackle and had aimed high on the armored torso to knock the man off balance. Bloody Melia cursed fool, he thought. He wasn't sure if he was thinking about himself or the turncoat. Himself, he decided. I should have run the other way until I'd found a blaster and then taken him out from a distance. The thought fled his mind as soon as it occurred. Adar's earlier fight with Ter had thrown him off balance, and he was making all sorts of avoidable mistakes. He grabbed for the turncoat's blaster with both hands and tried to yank it free, but found he did not have the right angle. The turncoat held to it as if it were fastened to him. Using one hand to hold the blaster at bay, Adar reached for the visor with the other, intending to remove the turncoat's helmet. His hand was stopped short just before he would have been able to touch it. In the heat of the fight, he'd forgotten about the invisible shield. Melia, he thought, another mistake like that and I'll be dead. Ter's confession must be having more of an effect on me than I thought. I should have pulled out my Oakwee dagger while I ran and focused on using only that. When Jorad had first used his Oakwee dagger to kill a Hunwake, Adar had not quite believed it had worked, even though he had seen the corpse. He had believed Jorad had got lucky and attacked a Hunwake who had lost its unseen protection. It was still hard to accept, even after seeing the Oakwee kill the Hunwake with their black-tipped arrows. Unfortunately, the black-tipped dagger was currently pressed against the turncoat, and Adar could not grab it. The turncoat rolled to the side, and Adar was powerless to stop it from happening as he was slammed into the cobblestones, while they struggled for control of the blaster. With the shift in position, he could now reach his dagger, but he was hesitant to let go while the Hunwake kept both hands on the blaster. The turncoat grimaced while they wrestled, sweat dripping down the side of his face. Fog had formed on the inside of the visor, and it reminded Adar of the water condensation that would collect on the windows of the indoor gardens of the Rarban Palace. Even though this was just another human, it was good to see one under the Hunwake banner show a bit of vulnerability. Adar growled when he remembered the gleeful, mocking way a Hunwake had looked at him the first time he tried to fight one of the things. That had been back in the Nebron town square. It seemed like it had happened more than a year ago, though it had not been more than 3 weeks. He had not been able to topple that Hunwake by himself. At least he'd brought this turncoat to the ground. That was something, even if it was not much. He had wondered if there had been something more than just the armor that made it difficult to tackle the Hunwake. While he suspected that the armor contributed, he was glad to know that it was just the weight of the large Hunwake. The turncoat's armor had made the job harder, but it was still possible. It was nice to have a foe he could bring down on his own, even if it was a struggle. Adar pulled on the blaster again, but the turncoat's grip was too tight. In a swift movement, he changed direction and pushed the blaster up into the Hunway's neck. While the turncoat wasn't able to keep it from happening, it didn't do any harm because the blaster hovered just a bit above the turncoat's neck. The man smiled in a taunting way. "Smile all you want," Adar thought, as he twisted and sprung to his knees while putting his weight down onto the blaster, pinning it with his hand and knee. He grabbed the Oakley dagger with his other hand and stabbed it into the neck of the turncoat. The dagger pierced through the invisible force, as if it was not there, and slammed into the flesh of the neck. Adar let out a breath he had not realized he had been holding. The man beneath Adar screamed and let go of his blaster to cover the wound with his hand as red blood spilled out from around his fingers. It seemed odd to have crimson blood come from within the Hunway armor. Adar had become used to seeing the blue. He stepped back while taking the blaster with him and trained it down on the man. Adar would not have normally hesitated to put a blast into the chest of a Hunway, but he was surprised to realize the young age of his opponent. He had been too busy to notice before. 9 burning hells, Adar thought. He's younger than Jorad. As the kid struggled to breathe, it was hard not to imagine Jorad peering back at him through that fogged-up visor. Adar lowered his weapon and stepped back. He could not do anything to help the kid, and he could not bring himself to finish the lad off with another blast. Confound it! He's younger than Wes. The turncoat would be dead in a few minutes anyway. Adar didn't make it more than a couple of steps before he heard something approach from behind. He spun just as the wounded turncoat barreled into him. The kid's neck was covered in silver, as if a metal bandage of some sort had been attached. The area of his neck that was still visible was bloody, and if his armor wouldn't have been black, that would have been red as well. Twisting away to lessen the blow, Adar controlled his fall and landed on the flat of his hand and lower arm. Ignoring the flash of pain as the cobblestones made contact, he brought his blaster up as the turncoat got to his hands and knees. Adar did not hesitate as he burned a hole in the middle of the turncoat's side. He frowned as he watched the kid fall, his stomach churning. He did not mind killing Hunway, but this was something else. It felt wrong to kill another man with a blaster. He got to his feet and looked around, half expecting to find the area swarming with turncoats who were just coming out of hiding. The rest of the Hunway lay quietly, and in most cases their bodies were still smoldering. He double-checked to make sure that there weren't any smaller than normal Hunway among those that were around him before he bent down and examined the throat of the turncoat. His initial impression had not been too far wrong. The man's neck was covered with a metallic substance that had plugged the hole that Adar had made with the Oakley dagger. After letting his finger hesitate just above it, he reached down to touch it and discovered that it did indeed feel like metal. "What new madness is this?" Adar muttered under his breath. He had killed many Hunway today, but he had never seen anything like this. The man should have been unable to move, but instead this metallic bandage had given him the ability to attack again. The kid had waited until Adar's back was turned. If he'd put on the bandage while I'd been watching, I would have shot him for sure. Adar stood as he felt a knot forming in his chest. He had been hoping he had already seen the full range of the technology they had to fight against, but the feeling slipped away as he wondered what else the Hunway had at their disposal. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker, all rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.